Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Do the Right Thing Right with your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. We may not have all the answers, but we'll help you find them. We're coming to you live from Houston, Texas, as we do every Thursday at 12 noon Central Standard Time. Our format is 30 minutes to allow for a short lessons learned application regarding ethics. For call-ins, dial 646-478-3840 or interact in our chat room.
Hello and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Do the Right Thing Right for Thursday, June the 25th. And I'm your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. I'm coming to you live from Houston, Texas. And as our announcer said, I want to remind callers that our phone number is 646-478-3840, or you can interact in our chat room. And so today's guest is Stephen Roberts, and thank you, Stephen, for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, Phyllis, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Listen, Stephen, tell us a little bit about your background.
All right. Well, my background started out is that I was going to college, and my sister was involved in a car wreck, and my parents came to me and then told me, basically, we have to cover some medical bills, and we don't have any money for paying for your college. And so I basically had to sink or swim. I knew I wanted to go to college, but I was just at the time was dead adverse. I didn't understand all of the things that I know now, but I wanted to find a way of being able to do it without having to take out student loans or go into massive amounts of debt. And so I started looking at different resources. And by the time I had finished college, I had received 11 scholarships and grants, two prestigious scholarships, and worked as a teaching assistant and a research assistant, and was actually paid more college than money than what college cost.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Now, where did you go to school and what did you go to school for?
I went to two different schools. I went to Salt Lake Community College, and then I went to Brigham Young University. And my major was electrical engineering and mathematics.
Oh, wow. Okay. That is interesting. So I know that you've got a book. Don't you have a book that you've published?
Yes, I do. I basically put is that I was able to go through it. It was a struggle in sometimes, but I figured a lot of things out. And I finished some school, and then when I started working in industry, I realized all of a sudden that a lot of people were still paying student loans 10, 15 mm-hmm. years after the fact. Well, mm-hmm. I decided to do something, so I wrote a book called Winning the Money Game in College. It's a story that teaches true principles on how to basically avoid student loans and stay out of debt.
Mm-hmm. And so where can people find your book at, Stephen?
My book is available, of course, on my website at www.collegecashchampion.com and also anywhere books are sold.
Super. So tell us, have you ever faced an ethical dilemma?
Oh, absolutely. Let me just share one from a class that I was actually struggling in. I was taking a test, and the teacher had printed off the test, and just what was happening is that it was multiple choice, but you still had to figure out the problems. It was more of an engineering class. But in any case, I started looking, and about a third of the way through the test, I realized something that the teacher didn't know, and none of the other students seemed to realize either, is he had printed off the answer key, and so the correct answers were shaded a different color. I don't know if it was because where I was sitting in the room, I had different lighting or what it was, but I suddenly realized is that I had a test right in front of me for a class that I was struggling in, but I could have, and very realistically, marked myself essentially 100% by seeing that I had I could see the tint was different for each of the correct answers. And so I was just sitting there, and as soon as I realized it, I mean, there's always the temptation for in a situation like that to want to exploit it and go, hey, I could, mm-hmm. you know, effectively mm-hmm. get a great grade on this test. And it would mm-hmm. be, you know, for about 30 to 40% of my grade would be mm-hmm. nearly 100%. Well, what I did almost instantly was I asked to have the teacher got into the hall. And he was kind of looking at me funny, like, what are you doing? It's test time. And so I took my test and I went out and explained the answer just so that none of the other students would hear, and just started pointing out and going, I think you printed off the answer key in place of printing off actually the test that we were supposed to have. I know, but you can't see it in the color. I printed it in black and white. But I showed him in the lighting that the tint was different for the correct answers. And so what he ended up doing immediately was pulling everybody's tests and reprinting. It took some time to be able to do it. But what happened is that everybody got a reprint on the test. And so what was good about it is that I didn't do very good in that class overall. But the thing about it is that was my grade. I competed fairly. I didn't try to cheat. I didn't do anything that would hinder or damage my own integrity just in terms of that. And so the class, it's in and of itself, I didn't do so great in, but I know that I earned it, and there was no dispute on that.
So did any of the other students realize what you had realized?
Not a one of them, at least that had admitted it.
Wow. Stephen, I don't know about that. If I was struggling in a class, man, that was a hard one. Well, did the teacher thank you for your honesty?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's just, I hit the point that I couldn't go back, continue on with the test. And this is where I just wanted to present it, because I, now knowing what I knew, when I realized the thing, I couldn't go on to the rest of the problems, because instantly I could foresee the answer. I wouldn't even, it wouldn't have been fair for me.
So this is just a technical question, but so when you you read the first question, right? And that's when you noticed the color change?
I noticed it about a third of the way through. I didn't notice it initially, so it was some of the time had already elapsed.
Okay. And so did you get the ones right that you had done?
Some of them I gotten right.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. I wonder how many people in our listening audience can relate to Stephen and his situation, because I'm not sure, Stephen, that everybody would have handled that the same way. And I'm not sure people would have shared it like you have shared it with us today. So thank you for that. I want to remind our audiences again, our number is 646-478-3840. So, wow, Stephen, that is very, very interesting. I think that this was in college, right?
This was in college, yes.
I think sometimes that when we're in college, we get very resourceful when it comes to test taking. I know a lot of times we cram for tests and, you know, till the next spend the night studying and all that just to pass the test, and knowing full well that, you know, we hadn't given it our 100% all the way up until that point. You know, we were missing class and not taking notes and sleeping in class and, you know, et cetera. So I commend you for that, Stephen. I think that's great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Phyllis.
Oh, no problem. So tell us, do you have another one you can share with us?
I do. This one's not a personal one, but it's one that I've seen kind of repeated over and over again. And the question is it ethical for us to make student loans so available and so widespread, but yet so hard for people to get out of? And what I mean by that is there's an individual I know of that I'll name is Jim. And what happened is that Jim wanted to be an architect, and so what he did is he took out student loans. And then he went on to get a master's degree, but by the time he was done, he had taken out about $120,000 in student loans. Well, here's where the problem comes, though, is that he realized that his payments were about $1,800 a month. What he didn't know and didn't realize is that the average for the industry average was not the starting salary. It was much lower. So after tax money, he was making about $2,600. When you subtract the student loan, that leaves only $800 approximately to live off of. And Jim couldn't make the payments to be able to also pay for his student loans and pay, you know, provide for a family.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
what happened is that Jim, he basically went to his lender and said, what can I do? And they gave him a forbearance. So all they did is they extended out the life of the loan, but then also had the stipulation that any additional money that he earned, so a bonuses or whatever, would go straight towards paying off the loan. Well, the problem is that because of the high amount of debt that he had, it affected his credit score, and it affected his ability to get a loan for a house. So he was stuck. He couldn't get out of it because of the fact that the bankruptcy laws prohibit getting out of student loans except in extreme cases, which don't apply to most people. And so Jim was stuck. He was sold on the idea that by going to school and getting a student loan would help him to get a better job. But the reality set in is that the, you know, Christmas bonuses that should be exciting are kind of depressing because he doesn't get to see any of the money. His payments may have been reduced, but the time frame got extended to be such a long time that it made it unreasonable, or he was prevented from doing, like purchasing a house or doing other things that he could have done otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as a nation, I would like to ask, is it ethical for us to do that to our 18-year-olds who, you know, may not have ever had a credit card before, may not have had really a bank account, or have been living under the protection of mom and dad's wing and may not fully understand all of the ramifications, the problems that happen, and all the results and what it actually, the true cost of doing that route, what it actually is. Is that actually ethical for us to do that? And my answer to that is absolutely not. That is not ethical for us to do, especially taking advantage of these young adults who are not as experienced in financial matters, if that's the way that they should go. And so how I personally have resolved this is, in my own life, is I didn't do that route, even at the time, not knowing all of the dangers. But second is when I saw that this was a problem for people, I wanted to help them, and so I wrote my book to give anyone with any background and any GPA many of the resources that most people don't know about that can help them prevent having student loans or getting into financial trouble.
So, Stephen, let me ask you, how did you find out about all the resources?
Well, a lot of the resources actually came through trial and error. Others, they came from being able to talk with people who did know some of the answers, like a college financial counselor, for example. They became a great resource. Or asking other people what resources they use, just asking a question. Well, how did what are some ways that I could pay for college? That was helpful for me to just look into things. And then other things came sort of naturally as I was looking around, looking for resources. And so was I perfect? No, absolutely not. But did I learn from my mistakes? Yes, I did. And I also learned a lot of things that worked and worked really well.
I agree with you, Stephen, about it. What, you know, if it's ethical, but I mean, there are so many students out there that want to go to college, and there's only so many scholarships out there and free grants, and I don't know if there's, is there enough for everybody.
Oh, there's not only is there enough, there's more than enough, and. Let me give a couple examples, perhaps, that will perhaps to challenge a couple of these beliefs that a lot of people, including myself, had previously. And here's the first one is this. This one is one that anyone can do. It doesn't matter on your GPA, but it was highly effective. And that's this. This might make you laugh, but it's get a job. And let me explain what I mean by that.
Okay.
I was given the opportunity to be a teaching assistant, as I mentioned before. And what they told me was, is part of the time I had to hold office hours. So, okay, I would go help students and answer questions. I showed up, and I very quickly found that nobody was coming. So I'm at a computer with my department, have all the software that I need, and I've got a backpack full of homework. And I've done everything else I'm supposed to do. What should I do right now? I pulled out my homework, and I started doing my homework. It was awesome. I got paid to do my homework. I kept that job for almost 3.5 years because it was a job that acted like a scholarship for me. Because I was on the clock for somewhere between, 10 to 20 hours per week, depending upon the semester. But it was amazing because people wouldn't come in, generally speaking, except right near test times. They would come in, ask a few questions, and then leave. The rest of the time was mine. I got to do, of course, let me not oversimplify this. I did do the grading. I did do the prep work, and I did do anything that was required of me first. But at the same time, I got paid to do my homework thereafter. And so having a job, this, I say, is a great resource because it doesn't depend on your ability to have a high GPA. It depends on your ability to get a job. What it will do for you is just having a regular job, doesn't matter what kind, is it'll build work experience and help with your resume, but then also give you cash. So that's a great resource. If you can find a job that will let you do your homework, that becomes a sweet spot where you're able to get paid to do your homework. You have to spend the time anyway, so you might as well get paid.
Right.
There are dozens of
these
types of jobs, like being a weight room attendant, an info desk attendant, a librarian to some extent, or an attendant at a night shift for a hotel or a parking lot attendant. All of these have some downtime. And if you can find out in advance that they let you, do your own thing when you've done everything else you're supposed to do, great. Mm-hmm. Take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Another strategy that anyone can use is this, is go check out some of the free resources that are available, such as the free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA, which is the route for being able to apply for a Pell Grant or a SMART grant, depending upon your major. Now, what happens is that you go apply, you ask a couple questions about your income and perhaps your parents' income, and what happens is that you can then get some money that will come as a grant. It's free money given available to people and administered by the school. But what happens is that going and applying and getting whatever free money you can, that's great. That's one bonus. Another bonus is by applying for that, many scholarships require you to do this anyway. So you might as well go do it up front just so that you can have the option and ability to pay for school. And so that's a great resource right there, saving people thousands of dollars and tens of thousands over a 4-year period.
Wow. You're right. I just finished my PhD, and I'm not going to say how much my student loan debt is, but it's frightening. It's frightening to the cost of education. And you get that education and one, you hope that you get on with the company and they give you a signing on bonus that'll help you, be able to put down on towards your student loan or something. But I don't know. I've always thought, and I could be wrong, but Stephen, wasn't there a period of time where grants were easily given versus now?
Well, okay. This is one of the things about my book is that any one resource, I try to present as many as I can within the context of the book, but at the same time, I'm not saying just depend on any one thing. For example, there's a common adage of don't keep all your eggs in one basket. Same idea holds true here is that if one thing doesn't work for you, go look at other resources. Now, in terms of grants specifically, that may be the case, but that doesn't limit. In fact, it's the opposite case with scholarships, for example. Now, in terms of getting a scholarship, most people ascribe, you've got to have nearly a perfect GPA to get a scholarship, or it's only for the athletic people, or it's only for people with a certain background or a certain heritage or something. And so all of this isn't true. And this is something I teach in my book is that there actually are three kinds of scholarships, for example. And the first one I refer to is what I refer to as a background-based scholarship. This would be like your heritage, the part of the country you came from, your religion to some extent, and also things that have happened to you in your life. It's not necessarily anything that you did actively. It was just things that you were either born into or had happened to you. And so there are dozens and hundreds and thousands of these types of scholarships. The next kind is what I refer to as a project-based scholarship. And what those are you do something to get something. It would be like taking a picture as a photographer or making a piece of art, making a video, doing service, or writing an essay. Those are doing a project where you do something to get something. The last kind I refer to is a merit-based scholarship, where what happens is that it's kind of like a project-based scholarship, but it takes longer and you have to be highly competitive. For example, I don't know of anyone who's never played the piano before who can walk into a piano recital, sit down, play a beautiful piece, and win like a scholarship off of it. Never met anyone who can do that. It usually takes years of time and practice to get to that level. Same thing with a high GPA. Or a cool one that I heard recently was a young man had raised a cow as a show cow and auctioned it off at a scholarship auction for $250,000. He won because, well, he had the best cow. And so people are looking in the wrong places and just describing what does and does not work for or in their situation. But if they can first find out what kind of scholarships do work for their situation, if they don't have a high GPA, focus on a project-based scholarship or a background-based scholarship. If they do have a high GPA, look at some of the merit-based scholarships. And so those type of things are helpful. And in terms of, you had said, are there a lot more or less of those type of things and resources? Actually, the opposite is true, is because companies, they want to show goodwill. They want to be able to create potential, say, interns that can then be better employees. And they also want to, you know, get a tax write-off. As blunt as it sounds, that's part of what they want. They want is being able to help others and get a benefit from it as well. And so a resource that a lot of people can go to is actually a website I really like is www.fastweb.com, fastweb.com. What this will do is you'll go through and fill out about 100 questions, no joke, of things that you've done, the clubs that you belong to, your interests, what your parents have done, any type of things you've done in school, out of school, any types of service that you've given your major, all of those questions. And what it'll do is it'll show you only the ones that actually apply to you. So it'll get rid of ones that don't belong to your major. It gets rid of ones that have a GPA that has a higher cutoff than what you have. Or it'll get rid of ones that perhaps you didn't select as an interest in to you. So that eliminates a lot of the work right there in terms of being able to know what actually does work for you. But what's great about this is you can see the deadline and apply to sort these scholarships by their deadline, but then also click on them, see a description, see if it's something that you want to do, and then from there, you can click on the links. It'll take you right to the page of the exact website where they have the form or the application to fill out. So you don't have to go searching through web pages or going on the internet to search for where to go. It just takes you there. And so what this can do is, this opens up. Now, I kind of wanted to test it, and I want all your listeners to pay attention to this. Okay, I picked an obscure major just to test it and then filled out a profile to kind of figure it out. I gave someone a 2.7 GPA, a 19 on the ACT, being a freshman in college in a major of agriculture with an interest in bull riding. Now, you wouldn't think that someone like that would have that many scholarships or opportunity.
Right.
Well, the reality was is when I hit the submit button, effectively what I saw was 83 scholarships available for $184,000 in scholarship potential. And so if someone like that with an obscure major who has very little interests can get that kind of money, what could you get?
Wow. Okay, so Stephen, what was your biggest financial mistake in college?
Oh, thank you so much for asking me that. I want to share this with your listeners so loudly, is my department emailed all of the people in my major. There were about 800 at the time. And what happened is that they said, there's a scholarship, a local company is offering a scholarship for two times the amount of tuition for two semesters. So it's double tuition, and they would offer a paid internship. Everything, all in all, was about $15,000 to $20,000. Mm-hmm. And so here's where my mistake came in, is there are 800 people in my major, and, well, I've got homework to do. Besides that, I would just be wasting my time writing the essay because they're going to give it to somebody else anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't apply. And so the deadline came and the deadline went, but I didn't apply. But what happened is about 2 weeks later, they announced the results. Now, here's the irony, Phyllis. 800 people worth about $20,000. How many people do you think applied? Oh, I forgot to mention, they're giving out two of these scholarships. How many people do you think applied?
I don't know, maybe 100?
That's kind of what my thoughts were, too. The sad news for me was three. Three people applied. They had a 66% chance of getting 20 grand.
Oh, my goodness.
And to make the matters worse, the two people who won, I knew them. And I knew where they stood approximately in GPA just because they were my peers and friends. And I could have gone head-to-head with them. But you know what? They deserve that scholarship. And here's why. They applied and I didn't.
Wow.
And so the biggest single mistake anyone can make is to self-select out. That's the biggest mistake that anyone could make. In other words, people believe that, oh, I won't get it, so I won't try. And that was my mistake. Mm-hmm. I could have had it. Not necessarily saying that I would have, but I could have had I actually taken the time. It's kind of like find standby, where if you put in your name in the ring, so to speak, and what happens is if there's a spot available, you may get it. But if you don't at least say, I want to go, you don't get it, even if there's one that was open and could. Scholarships will work the same way. And so this experience, it taught me a lot, but I started applying to lots of things. I applied to lots of scholarships, dozens, and even hundreds. But you know what? I did a lot. But here's the key. You only need one. One to change your life.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And so your odds go up substantially just by doing as Woody Allen says, is 80% of success is just showing up. Well,
right.
Kind of the same thing with scholarships is, you know, not necessarily 80% of getting them, but definitely 100% of being able to get them comes from applying.
Right. Well, listen, Stephen, it's been great having you on the show, and just 30 minutes is not enough time. But I want to thank my audience for tuning in today, and I want to thank our guest, Stephen Roberts, for joining us. And next week's show, we'll have another guest who'll talk about an ethical dilemma that he or she faced. So I invite my listeners to tune in next Thursday at 12 noon Central Standard Time. Remember, I'm your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. I may not have all the answers, but I'll help you find them.